This is the My Weight What to Know podcast, where we talk to medical experts about the latest research on weight management and how you can apply it to reaching your best weight. Weight bias is a problem that's often overlooked in our society, which is why advocacy is so important. We're speaking with Lisa Schaefer, the Executive Director of Obesity Canada, about this important issue tonight. Lisa, thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you for the invitation. I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
So Lisa, you're the Executive Director of Obesity Canada and a person living with obesity as well. And I'd like to start by talking about your personal journey, because I think that lived experience is something really unique that you bring to the role. When was weight first an issue in your life?
I feel like weight was an issue in my life since I was a little girl. It's something I foundationally remember as early as being in preschool, feeling like I was, and not feeling, knowing I was the biggest kid in the room. And really, I think it really cemented itself as, you know, as all good moms do, they want their little girls to take ballet, all those kinds of things. And moving into that space and finding that, you know, costumes, basic things were not designed with someone like me in mind, very much stood out. So I think those first social encounters when I was a little girl, that's when it really hit home to me that I obviously was living in a bit of a different body than everybody else.
And how were you trying to manage obesity before you reached out for medical help? Like what were you trying?
So I like to talk about my life kind of in three stages of that. Like, you know, when I was a kid, feeling slightly blissfully unaware, then becoming that aware and uncomfortable, and then becoming aware and empowered. So I would say, you know, that aware and uncomfortable is probably where I spent a lot of time in my life. And that was what, you know, trying to figure out how to be a teenager in a bigger body was one part of it. Then moving into your 20s, I was definitely engaged in my community. I was engaged in my health. I wanted to be a smaller person, which is what I thought the objective was, let's be honest as well. It wasn't about my wellness. It was about the size of my body that I was trying to control. And the levers that society told me I had to use were diet and exercise. So I was very focused on, you know, tracking my calories, doing as much movement as I could, and it still didn't seem to make a difference. You know, years and years of going to Weight Watchers, I think I've got more 5-pound stickers than probably anybody on earth does. But, you know, so the usual suspects, really believing that I could achieve success if I was just trying hard enough from that diet and exercise point of view. So that was definitely where I was trying to control or trying to make an impact. And I now understand that to be such a false summit. But still something that people need in their life is to be mindful of food and exercise, but it wasn't the cure for the disease that I actually live with.
And talk about the impact that that had on your mental health, really trying so hard to solve a problem that you didn't really have the tools to be able to solve.
You know, it's exhausting. I talk about, you know, feeling fundamentally like a problem to be solved, not a person with a life to live. And that kind of started again in that childhood kind of moment where, with all the love in her heart, my mom would take me to the doctor. Is this PCOS? Could she be diabetic? What was it? And it was never any of those things, which left me as a small person going, okay, then I'm the problem. Whatever is happening here is a result of my direct actions. And that's really hard place when you're a little person, or, you know, you're younger and you're trying to figure out life. There's a lot going on already. Adding that complexity in and that kind of shame, really, you know, that coat of shame that I think I wore for a really long time made me want to be perfect in every other way. So then you kind of become this hyper-vigilant, very people-pleasing. But I also was really high-achieving because I wanted to achieve greatness in everything else because I was so fundamentally flawed in my mind in this one way because of the way my body looked. So, you know, I got good grades. I had good jobs. I did all of the right things. And that should have also made me feel better about myself. But really, it kind of compounded a lot of things because I was like, how could I figure out so much else in life and be so dumb that I can't figure this out? Because let's be honest, that's what we hear as well about people living in bigger bodies. We're just lazy or a little bit stupid. We don't quite get that if I could just get my ducks in a row, I could really change things. And that is an exhausting place to live. It's like nailing Jell-O to a tree. You're never going to be successful, but the world keeps telling you to keep trying, or just give me a little bit more money, or just, you know, what don't you get in this? And it's such a shameful place to live from, knowing that you don't belong and that you don't fit, and that people have a lot of preconceived notions of my skills and ability before they even get to meet me or I get to say hello to somebody.
So what changed for you? What made you seek medical attention for obesity?
I was at an event that was put on, and I heard Dr. Ali Zettner, a physician out here in the west coast of Canada, speak. And that was kind of the first moment where I heard someone talking about obesity and as a disease in a way that was very resonant for me and made me feel like, okay, this is going to be different than the other times that I've reached out to a healthcare practitioner about this, because I definitely had before. And I was told, first I went, I remember going and I asked about, could I get a referral to a bariatrician? Because that was the language I could find at the time. And my GP looked at me and he said, that's not a word. He also told me I wore my weight well. And he asked me how much money I made to see if I could afford a very predatory commercial product that was available in the market. And that was my experience. So I kind of just kind of packed that in for the moment. But hearing obesity discussed in that different lens made me feel safe enough to go and at least start a conversation with somebody who truly was invested in understanding obesity as a disease.
So what was that like, seeing a healthcare professional who really understood obesity as a chronic disease? Did it feel like light bulbs were going off for you?
Very much. It was very transformative, for sure. And I will say, at that stage of my journey, because I have more plot twists to share as well, at that point in my journey, what it helped me realize is that this wasn't something I was going to be able to achieve by myself, that this was way more complicated, that there was a lot more factors involved than I realized. And most importantly, that I shouldn't have shame about asking for that help, whatever that looked like. Because when I walked in, I very much wasn't a person that was thinking about a surgical intervention. I just wanted to work with somebody who understood the space and could help me see my health and wellness for what it might already be, which was definitely a great and amazing part of the experience, because I know I walked into that meeting and I think I had a Fitbit, a body bug. I probably had a step counter in my shoe. I could tell her, every calorie that had gone in my face. I could tell her every step I'd taken. And one of the first thing she said to me was like, okay, let's take all of this off, because that's a bunch of noise that actually is feeding the wrong part of this conversation. And we need to get you back to what makes you happy and what you feel like you can be really successful at. And I have to say, that was a transformative moment for me, because as much as I loved running and being an athletic person, I probably was doing it with a big old, not probably, I know I was doing it with a big old chip on my shoulder. And hearing that and going, oh, I'm actually allowed to enjoy this as well, because I did, was a really seminal moment for me as well. And then she also helped reduce the stigma and bias that I had about myself, quite frankly. That was the start of that conversation. And probably some of the bias that I had towards the idea of needing a surgical intervention and feeling like that was something that only really desperate people would need to do, and made me go, oh, that's really jerky. That's not a good way to look at that at all, quite frankly. And that's a reasonable approach to a chronic condition, and to really open my mind up to it. And so I begrudgingly went on a wait list that still took another 3 years, two or three years of treatment and care and conversation with a really awesome healthcare practitioner that made a big difference. And then I had my surgery. And then that was a whole other run of the gauntlet, because I thought, okay, great, I'm being afforded something that isn't afforded to everybody. And I need to do this really well, because I still had that people-pleasing mentality in my head as well. And that I also very much had an idea and had bias about, okay, now I am that surgical person. So now I need to come out the other side and like look completely different and be that awesome person that everybody can take a look at. And that also was not my reality post-surgery. And that was a heartbreaking moment.
Okay, Lisa, you left us with a cliffhanger. You've had bariatric surgery. What happened next?
So I had my gastric sleeve surgery in 2015, and it went really well. And I, again, found this amazing community of people that were in a shared experience with me. And at the beginning, it was fantastic. I absolutely saw change. I felt amazing. And then the weight stopped coming off. And this cohort of people that I'd found that was my community kept losing weight, and I kind of got stuck again. And I thought, oh, I did it again. I messed up yet again. I was given this golden opportunity, and look at me, I messed it up again. And that's when one of the actual exercise physiologists in my multidisciplinary care team said to me, I'd really love to get you into this meeting so that you can hear someone speak, because I think it would help you a lot. I was in a really, really dark place. I really was. I broke my own heart is often what I say in the moment. And I got to go to an event and I got to hear Dr. Arya Sharma speak. And he was the scientific director of what was then called the Canadian Obesity Network. And again, he was speaking about obesity as a disease, but this was a room and a speech intended for healthcare practitioners. It was definitely going deeper into the science and the epidemiology of obesity and really looking at it that way. And he presented what is often referred to as the spaghetti slide. And it really just helped me release the burden, really, truly release the burden of shame and guilt that I was walking around with, feeling like I was just a failure who couldn't get her stuff together. And I was so moved that day that I literally walked up to Dr. Sharma at the end of the presentation and I said, my name is Lisa Schaefer, and you don't know me, but you should. And I genuinely did not know what I put in motion that day. But from that moment, I started volunteering and sharing my lived experience so that other people and quite frankly, other women in my mind could understand that we have been told a lot of lies along the way. Possibly some without malice. We know when we know better, we do better. And this is an evolving scientific space, absolutely. But just societal, from a society's perspective, we really have been told the wrong message. It really isn't about eat less and move more. That is an important part of everybody's life, but that is not a treatment solution for a chronic disease. And that this needs to be taken seriously at every level and understood as a chronic disease at every level as well. So then I started advocating. I was able to join the board of directors. And then I saw this opportunity was going to present itself to, for the executive director position. And I thought, I have to take this shot. And I am beyond thrilled. And I still get goosebumps when I get to introduce myself as the executive director of Obesity Canada. And Dr. Sharma and I still speak, and he continues to be one of my biggest cheerleaders along the way as well. And to think that I got to kind of be handed the keys to something that he put in motion, and next year will be our 20th anniversary, is nothing that I take lightly and something that I'm incredibly proud of to consider what will be part of my legacy as well.
So you mentioned body diversity earlier. I'd like you to talk about your shift, where you went from feeling like you were trying to lose weight to look a certain way, to wanting to just be healthier. Because I think those are two very distinct goals, and often we kind of conflate them and they shouldn't be conflated.
And I will say that one's like an ongoing bit of a challenge for me for sure. But again, I had this amazing community of women around me. I had been doing training to do 5Ks, 10Ks. I did 8Ks. I've done one half marathon. I've surfed. And I did all of that in a body that was over 300 pounds. And that was really important to me because I also foundationally believe we can't be what we don't see. And for whatever reason, I seem to be a lady who's comfortable to stand up and share my story and be an example and show people that you can surf. You can show up for yourself. You might need to ask for some special accommodations along the way, but the world should actually be really willing to do that for us as well. And if they aren't, that's kind of okay too. I don't want to be a negative and bitter person, but help people see their blind spots and see what is possible. So again, I would say that community of like-minded people is really what helped me shift my focus from going, I want to be smaller, to I'm healthy and I want to feel great about myself. And again, you know, the new definition of obesity being where adipose tissue is impairing health. For me, my biggest comorbidity or my co-challenges were around my mental health, my level of anxiety and depression. And again, that shame that I was walking around with for years did more damage to me than I did to my body by living in a bigger body. And I think that's really important for people to understand as well.
I agree with you. What are some of the misconceptions about obesity that you wish more people understood?
I wish that people would understand that obesity isn't a moral failing, that it isn't a choice, that it isn't a self-inflicted wound. And what I would scream loudest probably from the rooftops is, it's not what you think it is. For the most part, I think there's a lot of people out there who are very sure that they understand obesity and how to fix obesity as well. So I'm very much in a mode right now where I want people to be a little confused. I want people to see this as a little bit complex because both of those things invite curiosity. And if we're curious and we're asking questions about ourselves, to our healthcare practitioners, to our employers, to policymakers, we're helping them get unstuck and unsure. as well. When we know better, we do better. This is evolving science that has moved really rapidly. And quite frankly, the science has probably moved, we know science is moving faster than our systems are supporting right now. And the more we can do to help people understand that it's okay that they had it wrong as well, and give people the space and grace and time to move into new ways of thinking, I think that's going to be better for everybody. So it's okay that you didn't know it, but it isn't what you thought it was at all. And it's time to do some updating of our base programming.
Lisa, let's talk about Obesity Canada. What are some of the key initiatives Obesity Canada is currently working on to improve the lives of people living with obesity?
To be in charge of Obesity Canada and where we are going in the future. It is going to be our 20th anniversary next year, and that really provides us a lot of opportunity to reintroduce ourselves to people. So I think at Obesity Canada, what you're going to see us be a bolder. We're going to show up differently than we have historically, and we've got some amazing pieces that we really want to bring forward for everybody. The clinical practice guidelines that we released in 2020 have been embraced globally and are definitely seen as the gold standard of care and how to really move forward and implement care, treatment, and understanding of obesity. We've been adopted in 8 other countries and implemented in other countries as well. So we're thrilled. And part of that is that it's going to be a living document. Those guidelines need to be something that keep up with, again, the speed of science, which is moving really quickly in this field. We also have an update on that report card to care and access that is a reflection of what care and access truly looks like across Canada. We've released 2 report cards previously, and we've decided to kind of change things up a bit so that we're better reflecting those clinical practice guidelines that I was mentioning before as well. So we're really anchoring in the patient journey. And what we're doing is looking at the 5 stages of the patient journey and saying, what do each of those stages look like in each province and territory in Canada? And then instead of being people that promote shame and saying, you get an F and you get a D, we're going to move towards more of a, here's what it should look like, and here are the resources to help, and how can we help build bridges wherever possible? And then the third piece that we have that I'll share is we've done some amazing research that is going to be released in late 2024 that is around the cost of inaction. I think we're all pretty used to seeing those headlines about how much obese people are costing the economy, how much these drugs might be costing the economy. And all of those continue to reinforce that bias and stigma that if people just got it together, that they could do this by themselves. And, you know, those news reports often are accompanied by those headless, faceless blobs of people that, again, also reinforce and stigmatize. So we're flipping the script. And we're saying, hey, government, by not taking this seriously and providing access to care, you're creating a really big compounding problem. And again, those stories often reflect the cost and impact on the healthcare systems. And of the $27 billion projected, only $5.7 billion approximately of that is in direct healthcare costs. And the rest really reflects what we're losing in productivity and in our economy by not supporting people living with obesity. We know that that creates absenteeism. We aren't able to go to work as often. We also have struggle with presenteeism, and that was a new word to me. And that means that I'm showing up to work and I'm clocking in and I'm doing my job, but am I highly engaged? Am I being, you know, the best version of me? And what is my employer doing to support or not support those things? So there's some really brain-breaking statistics that come out as well as far as equity in pay for people living with obesity versus people living in a quote-unquote normal size body, and then what that gap looks like even more for women who are looking for employment and living in bigger bodies or living with obesity.
So why is advocacy going to be critical for accomplishing the societal and legislative changes that you've kind of outlined that really need to happen for obesity?
Because to me, advocacy really is about storytelling. And I know it's a lot more than that, but really that is where our stories come forward. That is where we can share the things that break our hearts and the things that excite us at the same time. So that advocacy, again, has to start with ourselves and advocating for ourselves, learning to show up for ourselves and asking for what we need so we can show up for ourselves as ourselves as well, without asking for everybody to change or need to temper themselves to have the conversations. We can do better for people. We can help people get care and access sooner. We can also just help everybody back off a little bit and understand that it isn't as simple as eat less and move more. And that's why advocacy is important. Because when you hear those stories and you start seeing those faces, you go, we have to do something about this.
So I'm inspired. I know the folks watching at home are too. How can people get started working, volunteering with Obesity Canada?
Come over to obesitycanada.ca. Please sign up for our newsletter. If you're in our patient community, we also have a community called OC Connect. It's a private community that you do submit a bit of an application to, but that's because we want to make sure that we're keeping the right people in and not letting some of those pernicious people in that might take advantage of us. It's also a place that is very much focused on empowerment. We have Advocacy 101 training in there. That self-advocacy is discussed there. We have like-minded people that are really talking about how to improve the systems and how to take care of themselves as well. So come join us, find your place in our community. Let's start the conversation. Let's make it easier to have a conversation. And that starts by saying hello. So just reach out, let us know what you need, or engage with us and start downloading some of the resources that we already have available.
Lisa, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been such an inspiring conversation.
I love it. And I look forward to more conversations as we continue to do our campaign work. I will come back and happily share more stories along the way.
We will be back to you with a new episode in a few weeks. Until then, please stay safe and take good care. Good night. We'd like to thank Novo Nordisk for the support of this program. Novo Nordisk is not responsible for the content of this show, nor have they influenced it in any way.